Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, February 24th, 2018. This is episode 1465. Enjoy. Well, hey, how are you today? Good to see you. Leo Laporte here. It's Tech Guy time. Time to talk about computers and the internet and, you know, home theater and digital photography and smartphones, smartwatches, all the things that are amassing to change our lives. Phone number, if you want to talk and join the conversation, is 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can also call outside that country, those countries, by using Skype out or some such solution. That'll do it, too. 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. We have a fine website. A fine website, which we are about to convert to a secure website, because Google is about to penalize anybody who doesn't do that with their website. Google's interesting. Google is, what is it they said? A mystery wrapped in an enigma. It's a big company now. Very big. Very, very, very big. And, There's an article in the Sunday Times about the case against Google. Charles Duhigg wrote it. It's saying that Google's gotten so big it's now blotting out the sun, and maybe we ought to do something about it, like break it up, like Standard Oil and AT&T in our past. It's just gotten so powerful, and it really is powerful, isn't it? Google doesn't have a total monopoly on search. But it sure has an effective monopoly on search. Most people use Google. The people who don't use Google are primarily, I think, people who don't change the default search settings in their Internet Explorer or Edge browser, their Microsoft Windows machines. And so that's Bing. And that's maybe 15% of all searches. And the rest is Google. Google, 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 Google. Google, Google, Google. And because of that, if you're not in Google, and you know this, if you have a website and people spend a lot of money and time and effort trying to get the Google rankings to go up for your site. If you don't show up in Google search, if somebody searches for your name or the topic you cover or the business you're in, and you don't show up, you don't exist. How does somebody find you on the internet? Your business card, I guess. That's a little bit more limited than having your company's site show up in the Google search results. So they have a lot of weight. They have a lot of power. They also have the dominant browser now, Chrome, which we all use. I use it. It's a lovely browser. But you don't want one company to own the internet in search and via the browser, because then, wow, total dominance. So one of the things Google, not everything Google does is for ill. In fact, most of it's for good. Their goal is to make all the world's information accessible. Okay, that's cool. Their real business is selling advertising against that. So, you know, if you do a search, ads show up. And they've gotten in trouble, both in the United States, but primarily in Europe, for favoring their results or for scraping websites and eliminating the need to visit them. I'll give you an example. When you search for weather on Google, it'll show you your weather. Google doesn't know what the weather is. It gets that from another weather site, probably weather.com or the like, and puts it up there. The problem is weather.com doesn't get the traffic. Their information is scraped. Google gives it to you. You're happy. You go away. Google says, well, that's what people want. They don't want a link to the weather. When they search for weather, they want the weather. But if you're a weather site that's just been scraped by Google and you don't get the traffic, well, that's kind of annoying. So Google is saying now that, well, we want all websites to be secure, HTTPS, which to me, of course, it makes sense to be secure if you're a commerce site or if you're a bank. If you have accounts, you want to make sure that traffic, if it's email, is secure. That's great. And we've done a good job, I think. The internet has really done a good job of making those sites secure. And browsers will warn you if you go to a site and you're trying to give them your credit card number and it's not secure. That's good, too. But now browsers are going to warn you if you go to any site and it's not secure. Microsoft's going to do this as well. I'm sure Apple will in time. And Chrome is going to do this in about 2 weeks, I think March 18th. So we have a site, Tech Guy Labs. It's not secure because you don't make an account there. You don't. We don't take credit card numbers. I don't ask for any personal information. So it's, you know, why does it need to be secure? You're not giving me any information. I'm giving you information. You can make the argument for secure that it needs to be secured in case somebody poses as techguylabs.com and asks you to pay for it. You know, give me a credit card number. Because if that happened, it wouldn't be me. It'd be a bad guy posing as me. They call it sometimes a man-in-the-middle attack, somebody getting in between you, your browser, and me, pretending to be me and asking you for information. You can do it in a variety of ways, a variety of attacks that can cause this. And Google wants to make those impossible, and I think it's the right thing to do. But I don't know. Well, anyway, it's going to... And if I don't do it in the next 2 weeks, and if you don't do it, if you have an insecure site in the next 2 weeks, when people go to your site on Chrome, it'll say insecure site. It doesn't quite say go away yet, but that's probably next. Google's trying to make the web safe for everybody under every circumstance. I guess it's like seatbelts, right? The problem is we absorb the cost, not Google. I have to now pay programmers to redesign the site slightly. It's not going to take a lot. I have to go to a certificating agency, a CA, and buy a certificate from them. That's going to cost, I don't know yet. Last certificate I bought was a couple of $1,000s, so it's not cheap. There are ways to do it for free on some sites, just not my site. Let's Encrypt is a solution that's free for most people. And if you're on WordPress or some other Squarespace, if you're on a typical blogging site, Blogger, of course, Google's own blogging site, there's just a switch that makes that secure. That's easy. And so I guess in balance, it's a good thing. It just feels a little heavy-handed. I'm sure people felt the same way when the federal government said, you need to put seatbelts in cars. I'm sure the auto industry said, oh, come on, really? But frankly, if we hadn't done that, I think many more lives would have been lost. Car industry in the 50s and 60s was making very unsafe vehicles because they didn't have to make anything safe. So that's probably a good thing. But Google's not the government. Google's just a private enterprise with so much power that they can do things that only governments in the past have been able to do. Like this. Change the internet. Hey, talk about power. Kylie Jenner. Now that's power. She tweeted this week, I don't like the new Snapchat. Your tweet exactly was on February 21st. So, S-O-O-O-O. Does anyone else not open Snapchat anymore? Is it just me? Ugh, this is so sad. To which the stock market immediately responded by shaving $1.3 billion out of Snapchat's market value. Whoa! Analysts downgraded the stock to sell from neutral after seeing a significant jump in negative reviews of the app's redesign. Kylie Jenner doesn't like it. Get out. Get out now. The reason Kylie Jenner and others don't like the new Snapchat, I understand, is because it's not as easy to find her posts. They're mixed in, intermingled with paid postings from other publications. And, well, that's not good for her. So I don't like that. Ugh. 1.3. It's amazing, isn't it? Talk about power. 8888-ASK-LEO. Google maybe deserves to have a little power. Kylie Jenner, not so much. 888-827-5536. Call me. Let's talk. Let's take a break. Take a breath. I'm going to do some mouth exercises and get my mouth working, and then we'll go to the phones. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. Hey, there she is. There she is, Kim Schaffer.
Doing a little psychedelic thing with those rocking
out
there.
Oh, I just playing with my buttons.
She were.
Did you like? I saw you laughing. You like that, huh?
I was like, where is he going to land?
So people who are watching or listening to the show don't know what you're talking about. But we, for some reason, I still don't understand what I was thinking. Many years ago now, I think it's been 8 years or something, we decided that we would stream live video of the radio show while we're doing it.
Well, because it's kind of cool, but at the same time, you know what they say about people in radio.
Yeah. Well, you look great. You always look great, but me, maybe not so much. It disillusions people. You know, they imagine what you look like. And
well, yeah, I remember growing up, my favorite radio people, I had this image in my head of what they looked like. And then when the internet came around, I was completely off. No, some of them were very attractive.
Howard Stern looks good.
Howard Stern wasn't the one I was going
to. You know, people have done this for years. Don Imus did it for a while on MSNBC until he got in trouble. And Stern's done it for a long time. But it's just part of it. We also, as you know, do a lot of podcasts. And we just just stream live video. People can watch it. I don't know. It's kind of nutty. But anyway, I have the one thing that's a little weird is that I...
You have control.
I have control. That's really...
That is so unusual.
I have my own little buttons I can push. And so I was just playing with it, trying to rock out.
You were.
With the switcher, which probably made people nauseous. So I'm not going to do that anymore.
Had
Sorry.
That anime effect on some
Yeah, it was
people.
A little weird.
It's a seizure.
I have all these effects that I don't even use. I have green screen in here and all sorts of strange things I can do. I never do them. I should probably play with this a little bit and see what amazing
to the guys that know how to do it.
Yeah. Well, that's what we have Alex for.
Yeah, exactly.
Alex is our we call him the flow master. He's in charge of the switcher.
Yeah.
But he lets me play with it when I'm doing the radio show. Anyway, what can you've been answering the phones. You've been doing real work while I've been pushing buttons. How should I start here? Should I begin with?
Mark in Grand Rapids notices that each app has a different keyboard and wants to know how he can tell which keyboard, when he likes one, he could set it as his default, if that's
possible.
Oh, that's
interesting.
Yeah, I hadn't heard this question.
I have not either. I don't know what he's talking about. We'll find out. Thank you, Kim Schaffer. Hello, Mark in Grand Rapids.
Hi, Leo. Good to talk to you again.
It's great to talk to you. So which Android phone are you using?
I have a Pixel XL.
Okay. And you're saying that when you launch an app, you get a different keyboard.
Yes. Well, not every app. Some apps get a different keyboard. Like there are different characters in the main keyboard.
Oh, yeah. So you're allowed to, in apps, Apple allows this as well, to specify to the operating system. Well, for instance, apps where you're just going to enter a number, they'll say, well, don't put up a QWERTY keyboard, put up a number pad. Apps where you need to enter an email, they'll have the @ that you're going to be using. And sometimes they'll even have a .com, .net, so you can just press one button.
Exactly.
But that is, those keyboards are not really available to you, I'm sorry to say. They're available to the programmer. The programmer, when he's writing the code, can specify. They're predefined keyboards that Android defines, saying, you know, this is the keyboard for entering numbers. This is an email keyboard. So the developers don't have that much control over them either, is my understanding. There's no reason a developer couldn't write their own keyboard, put it in the app, but most don't because, in fact, I don't know anybody who does because that's so much work. This is actually the way, in general, the way apps are developed. Developers these days don't write everything from scratch. They use what we call libraries. And on most modern operating systems, certainly mobile operating systems like iOS and Android, they provide a lot of the tools. You don't have to know how to draw a window. You don't have to know how big. For instance, on Android, their screen sizes are all over the place, right? You don't know what screen sizes you're going to get. So they have what they device-independent screen descriptions that should scale to any size or shape of screen automatically. They expect developers to use those. So unfortunately, you don't really have access to those keyboards unless you write your own app. You can write your own app. Now, the good news is on Android, you have a choice of a lot of keyboards.
Right. That's what I thought. Yeah.
So you can go to the Play Store, and it works, I think, a little better. On Apple, as is usually the case with Apple stuff, they don't. You can choose a third party keyboard like Google's Gboard, which is kind of my keyboard of choice. But if it goes to a password entry or something like that, Apple will say, "Yeah, we don't trust this guy, so we're going to use our keyboard." So Apple, it's really disconcerting sometimes on the iPhone. The keyboard will just change randomly. I guess it kind of what you're describing kind of might look that way to you too, but it's really the developer trying to surface keys that you're more likely to hit in certain situations.
That makes sense. Good. Good.
The company that made the best third-party keyboard for a long time, Swype, S-W-Y-P-E, just pulled them off the market. They pulled it off. They were bought by Nuance, which is slowly buying up all kinds of companies, and Nuance decided not to offer it anymore. And I think partly that's because they've noticed their market share dwindle as Google has, for instance, adopted that swiping gesture typing instead of tapping. There's no reason to use Swype anymore. SwiftKey is probably the best third-party Android keyboard. You might take a look at that. And SwiftKey does allow you to theme your keyboard and modify it slightly. In the settings, you can add a number row and things like that. So you might like SwiftKey. I'd take a look at that. That's free.
That sounds good. Great. Thank you for the information.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling. You got a lot longer answer probably than you were bargaining for. by default with the Pixel, with the Google's phones, you're getting Gboard, the Google keyboard. And Google's really put some effort into making that better and better and better. Each phone manufacturer, Samsung, LG, HTC, has his or her own keyboard. Usually they don't use the Google keyboard. In fact, it's one of the problems in the Android world. They tend to not want to use any of the Google stuff. So they have their own Messenger program, even though Google makes one. They have their own email program, even though Google makes one. They have their own browser. Samsung's got its own internet browser, even though they're required to bundle Chrome into all the Android phones anyway. So it's one of the problems you get on Android phones is you might have a variety of different tools, and that's kind of confusing. It's why I often tell people it's a tweaker's delight. If you like to mess with stuff, Android's fabulous. But if you don't, you probably should stick with iOS because that's Apple's kind of thesis. Their theory of software in general is, we'll take it. We'll take it from here. We'll tell you what. We figure out what the best thing is and then we give it to you, and that's that. Let's take a little tiny break. Coming up, Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru, is going to talk about TVs and sound and so forth. And I'll take more of your calls, too. 8888-ASK-LEO. Website, techguylabs.com. Still not secure. Yeah, and one of the concerns Apple has, of course, with this is that a keyboard can grab, can grab what you're typing. So Apple says when you install a third-party keyboard, make sure you trust these guys, and that's true. So you should only install keyboards from, Google or Microsoft or, companies you trust. SwiftKey's safe. Swype was fine. They don't offer it anymore. It's kind of fun when you're learning to write software, to see what the libraries and the utilities are offered you by, the operating systems. They call, these libraries are part of what they call the SDK, the Software Development Kit. And learning the SDK is a big part of learning how to program iOS or Android. You'll spend a lot of time on that in your classes. Bump-de-bump. It's time for Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru. He joins us each week from the avsforum.com, where he is an editor, to talk about audio and video. We talk a lot about TVs. You know what we don't talk a lot about is audio, Scott. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good to see you. And I've been lately talking a lot about audio because Apple released its HomePod. And all the raves from all the people, all the tech blogs and the gadget blogs.
Yep, I've seen them too.
Loving it. Then along comes David Pogue at Yahoo and Consumer Reports. And both do blind tests and say, actually, the Google Home Max sounds better. And then that that upsets everybody. Because there is this mythos around Apple that they are somehow magical and they will create, in a speaker the size of a toilet paper roll, the ultimate speaker. And and it's very good for its size. I mean, it really does sound wonderful.
It is. There's no question about it. And given that Tomlinson Holman, the TH of THX, is now the head of Apple Audio, it better.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There's only so much you can do with a little speaker that's a couple inches across.
You know, Apple's kind of saying, well, we're doing a lot of computational audio. This reminds me of the sound bars and the binaural sound before that, quadraphonic sound before that, where people said using electronic circuitry and magic and wizardry, we can make two speakers sound bigger. And now Apple's saying I can make a small toilet paper size roll speaker sound like, you know, a symphony orchestra. You can't.
You really can't.
So it sounds very good for what it is. Yeah, soundbar.
You can get surprisingly far with DSP trickery.
Right.
But you cannot change the laws of physics.
And you can't move enough air, although it's what they call a high excursion woofer, but it's only a few inches. So it can't move enough air to give you a boom, boom, real bass.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's true.
So
it's true.
Thought, you know, as long as we're talking about this subject, the $349 is what the HomePod costs. It's not stereo. It's a single speaker. You'd have to spend another $349 to get a stereo, and they still don't do stereo pairing.
I was going to say, can you link them together
to do a
stereo pair?
They're waiting on AirPlay 2 before you can do that.
Mm. And they're omnidirectional. They send their sound in all directions.
They have tweeters all the way around. Most speakers do not do that, right?
No, correct. They fire in a direction. And granted, the sound spreads out in more or less a spherical pattern.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, sort of concentrated in one direction,
right.
Whereas the HomePod and speakers like it really do radiate out in all directions. So if you want to be careful about it, you have to be careful about placing it, because if you place it very near a wall, you're going to get that reflection.
Yeah.
And if that, depending on how far from the wall, the delay in that might cause a problem, the delay between the direct sound and the reflected sound.
Right.
So you have to be a little careful about it. Obviously, to me, the HomePod and speakers like it are really meant for, you know, wallpaper music.
That's what I've been saying. You put that in your kitchen when you want to hear music as you move around, and it sounds great no matter where you are.
No matter where you are.
Does anybody, I guess somebody must, I do sometimes, sit down in front of a stereo at the apex of the triangle formed by the left and right speakers and listen to music? People still do that, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. They're called audiophiles.
And they're a shrinking group of people. So that's a better way to do it.
It's surprising. It you would think it's a shrinking group of people because the average age is pretty up there.
Yeah.
And yet magazines like Stereophile and The Absolute Sound are still rocking.
They still do.
They're still there. And they're still selling ads. Now, the reason I think so is because there's a million little audiophile companies.
Yeah.
Whereas for TVs, you know, there's how many? 5-6 companies tops.
Right.
So it's a little bit different with that. I've heard the HomePod referred to as, you know, the first audiophile grade.
Yeah, I disagree.
You know, smart speaker.
I'm sorry, true.
I don't buy it. No.
No. And by the way, if you want a smart speaker, you can hook an Echo Dot or Amazon's Echo up to your stereo. You can hook your Sonos, has bridges that you could hook up to your stereo.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
You can have, if you want streaming music, and music you can command with your voice on your stereo, you can do that. It's not that you can
do that.
Do that.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Here's where people kind of get into trouble, at least me. Then you start to say, well, okay, I'd like to get a good stereo. It's not so hard to pick a receiver or an amp. I mean, you can't go too far wrong, I guess.
Can't go too far wrong with the major brands anyway.
Your input, you know, your audio will be, there are a variety of, you could play CDs, you could play from a USB or a hard drive.
Although not very many people are doing that. Did you see that Best Buy is now removing CDs from their stores?
Wow. Yeah.
They're not going to sell CDs anymore.
Fewer and fewer people are doing that.
Right. It's all online. But you can get,
I actually listened. I downloaded music from high quality music and better than CD quality music, 24-bit music, and put it on a USB key and plug it into my Onkyo receiver, which does a very nice job. Plays it back just fine into my nice stereo system. I have a subwoofer and left and right speakers. It's part of my home theater. I guess that's, for a lot of people, that's kind of where they're going to get their stereo, is they're going to build a 5.1 surround sound system.
Correct.
And then but you can still listen to great music on it, even if you don't use the rear speaker. So, but I look at speakers and that seems like a very subjective thing. Can you, this is
you're opening up a huge can of worms here, Leo.
Yeah. So it's true, true for headphones and for speakers.
You can objectively evaluate speakers by measuring their frequency response and a variety of things.
Yeah, you could say however, accurately it reproduces the sound
it's getting. Correct. However, most of the time those measurements are performed in what's called the near field, where the speaker, the microphone is right next to the speaker.
Right.
It takes out the effect of the room on the measurement. And when you're sitting and listening to speakers, you're sitting in a room, and that room has certain acoustic characteristics. So the walls may be more or less reflective. If you're really into it, you might have applied acoustic treatments to the room.
Right.
Because every room is different, and it colors the sound that you hear. You're not going to listen to the speaker where you're going to place that measurement microphone that is right up against the speaker.
Right.
You're not going to do that. You're going to sit back in that equilateral triangle you mentioned.
Right.
And you're going to listen to it, and the sound is going to come to you directly from the speakers, but it's also going to come as reflections from within the room. And depending on that room, you know, if you're in a gigantic room, maybe it won't be that much of an effect.
So it's kind of silly to worry about whether it's flat, perfect reproduction.
It's not silly. It's a piece of information.
And by the way, this is something Apple says it does do with the HomePod. It adjusts automatically to the room.
Yes, exactly. This is similar to a TV adjusting its brightness depending on how much ambient light is in the room. It's got a little sensor.
But before we go too far down that road.
Yes.
I want to encourage people to, you don't have to spend, you. How much do you have to spend to get a left-right stereo system that you could listen to good quality music? It's under $1,000, right?
Oh, easily, sure.
I mean, it's more than $349.
Yeah.
But if you got two HomePods, that'd be $700.
Yeah.
You could get a stereo system for $700, couldn't you?
Easily, yes, you can. You can.
Where do you go to read reviews for speakers that are trustworthy? Is there?
Well,
or is it just, you just have to is it like movie critics? You have to find somebody you kind of mesh with.
That's a whole conversation right there about the trustworthiness of reviews. Basically, I go to soundandvision.com is a good source.
That's one of the big stereo magazines.
One of the big home theater magazines. Stereophile.com certainly has two
channels. So these established experts, they're good choices.
That's what I would recommend.
Sometime we should sit down and talk about what to get, but we are out of time this time. But thank you for all your help. And you can read all of Scott's works at avsforum.com. He's the editor over there. And always consistently fascinating. Thank you, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll go back to your calls right after this word from our sponsor. Hey, Alex, I screwed something up on my switcher when I was doing that beep, beep, beep. I can't press buttons anymore. I think I just clicked something wrong over here. I did something silly over here with it.
Dag nabbit. Oh,
It's something over here. I clicked.
It's DSK.
I clicked the wrong thing. That's switching, but it's not switching, right?
So partly this
came up because I started subscribing to Reddit's audiophile subreddit.
Oh.
And somebody actually posted a thing. Let me see if I can pull it up for you because it was kind of cool. Did you fix it?
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm such an idiot. I apologize.
No, it's complicated.
He said, "Yeah, it's complicated, and it's job security," says Alex. keep screwing it up. He said, "I set up something for my mom, and she's very grateful," he said, because she says, "I hear instruments I never heard before." Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really kind of cool. And he described a fairly inexpensive system that he set up with a turntable, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which I thought was interesting. Let me see if I
can. It's very interesting. Yeah. You know, I mean, older folks remember it. Vinyl. Yeah. You know, younger people like it, too. It's still popular for some reason. I myself am not enamored of it. I much prefer digital, but that's me.
Well, and then you look at once you start. So I looked at turntables, and you can get a decent turntable for a few hundred dollars. And then
right.
But then you have to clean the record, and you have to start buying mm-hmm. records, and it's kind of an endless thing.
The whole process of making sure the record's clean and the tone arms aligned and all this stuff is just I have no patience for it.
So I abandoned that. Actually, I purchased it on Amazon and I canceled it 30 seconds later. I went, "What am I doing? This is insane."
What turntable?
Yeah, I thought this is insane. So, but I do, and now I'm using, I have two sets of speakers. I have Emotiva speakers and I have Epiphone speakers. They're fine, right? There's no reason for me to run out and get something else. But, you know, then I look at this audiophile reviews and people raving about their monitor speakers or whatever. And I go, maybe I should have those. And maybe it's time to spend some money on better speakers. But I don't.
You know, we didn't have a chance to talk about this on the air, but as you spend more money, I'd say, generally speaking, you're going to get better performance. Not always.
Yeah.
You can find really good stuff.
You can get ripped off. Yeah.
You can get ripped off.
Yeah.
But let's say, generally speaking, you know, you spend more money, you get better quality, better performance, until a certain point, at which point I think it levels off.
And you can't really hear the difference, probably.
And you can't really hear any better difference. Yeah. And you know, people spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on speakers.
Yeah.
And – you know,
I really wanted, you know, remember for a long time I wanted to get those B&Ws, those Bowers and Wilkins speakers.
Well, they're great speakers. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm glad I didn't, because I don't think I'd notice the difference. Anyway.
I did myself a disservice by not mentioning AVS Forum for speaker reviews. Cause,
do you do reviews there too?
We do. Yeah. Oh,
okay. Well, I would trust that.
My colleague Mark Henninger, the senior editor, does actually quite a few speaker reviews.
Well, I'll mention that for sure.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah,
that was my mistake. Twisted Mister is saying ELAC speakers.
ELAC.
Another
excellent. That's what he got his mom was ELAC speakers. Actually,
there you go. Excellent.
They have good bookshelf
speakers.
Really?
Yeah, really. For the money, they're phenomenal. They're designed by Andrew Jones.
I didn't know that.
One of the most – he moved over from Pioneer after he did Pioneer
speakers.
Well, that's
funny because I almost got some ELAC speakers. All right. You're going to be around for the top, right?
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Happy to.
Thank you. Scott is so self-effacing. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy. I asked him where to get speaker reviews, and he mentioned all these competitors. Of course, his own site, AVS Forum, has excellent speaker reviews from Mark Henninger, avsforum.com. So he wouldn't plug himself, but I will. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I feel like I would like to maybe. Is it quixotic? Is it a fool's errand to try to convince people that music can sound really good if you get a stereo system? Or that's just old fashioned, isn't it? Nobody does that anymore. Although somebody just said that all the youngsters, the youngins, the youths in Great Britain seem to be going back to turntables. In a way, I celebrate that. I think that that's kind of magic dust. I don't know if turntables really do sound better than CDs. But in order to do that, of course, now they have to go out. If you're going to buy a turntable, you're going to buy an amp, and you're going to probably spend some money on good speakers. And so the music will sound a lot better, and they will be ending, you know, going out and getting some good stuff. So in a way, I kind of celebrate that return to turntables. Scott and I were talking off the air. It's a little too fussy for both of us. You have to clean the turntable, make sure the tone arm and clean the record, buy records, you know, and they wear, you know, you have to really take good care of records and the tone, you have to make sure the tone arm is balanced and blah, blah, blah. And meanwhile, CDs do a pretty darn good job. I don't know there are people who argue that the analog reproduction of a record, because a record's not digital, it's moving that needle in sympathy to the actual audio of the performance. Well, except nowadays, almost all performances are recorded digitally. Right? So, yeah, I guess if you're getting Miles Davis Kind of Blue, which was recorded on reel-to-reel tape, and you're making a vinyl record of that, that's all analog. But anything later than the mid-90s was recorded digitally. And so if they're making vinyl out of anything modern, they're converting at the factory the bits into sound that moves the needle. Well, you might as well just do that at your house. Why introduce the vinyl, the needle, the transport, and all of that? There'd be no point. So I think if you're listening to anything in the last 20 years, you probably should just stick with digital. And I love these digital downloads. Now, the people laugh at me because I don't buy CDs. I buy generally buy music, you know, well, I shouldn't say that. A lot of the music I listen to nowadays, and I bet you too, is streaming, right? You're listening to Spotify, Apple Music, Google Music. That's the wallpaper music. But if you really were serious about something, album that you just loved, I just have to have Daft Punk, Up All Night. I just have to have that. You might want to buy a digital master, something that hasn't been down mastered for CD. You can, and there's a lot of argument about how many bits you need to have and how many samples you need to have per second and all that. But I think a lot of recording artists record their stuff at 24-bit. It's downsampled to 16-bit for a CD. And some of them record at 44,100 samples per second. That's the CD quality. But some of them do 92,000 bits per second. So something at 9224 is probably closer to the original master. Why not, if you can, it's a little bit more expensive, why not just get the master, uncompressed master? Play that back through your stereo system. Those sound pretty darn good. 96, sorry, not 92, because it's, I don't know why it's not double 44.1. Why isn't it 88.2? Pretty much everybody agrees there's nothing more to be digitized past that 96 kilohertz. So there are 88.2 recordings, the chat room's telling me. See, you can go on forever with this. I get that music from a number of different sites. HDTracks.com is probably the best known. Some say, oh, you know, some of these are not, you know, you're getting 96 kilohertz by 24 bits, but the original wasn't that high quality. They're just redigitizing CDs. You want to be careful about that. There's a site called AIX Records, and Scott's interviewed the guy, I think, who does iTracks at itrax.com. And iTracks you can trust because Mark Waldrop, who runs iTracks, actually records most of the music himself at a high quality, using very high quality recording gear. And so the problem is, of course, it's a very limited selection. But that's a great place to get high-resolution music if you have the way to pay it. And you know what? Convenience-wise, it's probably, for most people, just stream it off a highly compressed off of Spotify. I feel like we want to kind of, and you know what, the best thing to do, I just want to preserve great music. Best thing to do, best way to do that, go to a concert, for crying out loud. That's the best way to do that. From time to time, go hear a live performance. Then you're hearing all the bits. Doug on the line, St. Louis, Missouri. Hi, Doug. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
About a year ago, I installed an SSD into my wife's computer and copied everything over from the old hard drive. And then it booted up to the new drive just fine.
Oh, good.
And about a week or so ago, her power supply went out.
Oh.
And I changed out the power supply and hooked it back up to the two drives. And now it wants to default to the old drive as the boot drive. and I can't get it to even switching it into BIOS to change the boot order, which I shouldn't need to do in the first place anyway.
Did you, by any chance, when you took the power supply out, did you accidentally swap the cables, the SATA cables leading to the drive? Because there is an order on the motherboard for boot. There's a just kind of default boot order.
I see.
Yeah, that might have happened.
No, I could try that, yeah.
You can override that. It's usually in BIOS. But one way to test that is disconnect the drive you don't want to boot from and see if you can boot to the boot drive. It may be there's something wrong with the boot drive, and so the computer says, well, tried that. Let's see what else you got. You also may want to clear the system configuration data from the BIOS. Modern BIOSes don't call it ESCD anymore, but there is somewhere in the BIOS a way to clear the memorized system configuration data. You might want to clear that as well.
But so kind most of it back to the default.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to do that. But look through the BIOS settings. It depends on the age of the computer. See if there's something called clear the ESCD or reset the ESCD. But in theory, it should pay attention to what you tell it in boot order. But it sounds like it's not. So swapping the cables or something like that might have. I feel like what might also have happened is the boot drive might be damaged. So you want to try just at least first booting from that by disconnecting the secondary drive.
Yeah, it'll boot to each drive independently.
Oh, okay.
If there's just each single one.
Okay.
Like right now, it's booting to the SSD because I have the other one disconnected.
Yeah, you did what I suggested. Yeah, see, that boot priority should really solve that. I don't know why it's not. Take a look at the cables.
Is there any way to disable the booting function of the second drive? I mean, I don't want to.
Yeah, because the second drive has a boot record on it, right? So, you could just clobber that master boot record. You had an operating system on there at one time. You don't want to boot to that anymore. Generally, that's why the way to copy the old drive is not to copy the whole thing, but to just copy the data. So you can clobber the master boot record easily enough. I'd be a little nervous about that, only because at least you can boot. But, yeah, if you want to, that's what you can do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You might end up. Somebody's suggesting a boot manager, but you should be able to tell it which physical drive to boot from. I'm not sure why it's not paying attention to the boot priority you're giving it. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, Scott Wilkinson has kindly agreed to stick around.
Of course. Always
so
happy
I'm
to.
Set you up here with everything.
Thank you. Oh, my numbers. That's very important.
Yeah, get your numbers. Get the numbers.
Got to get your numbers. That's right.
Your numbers.
There's been a kind of an interesting discussion going on in the chat room about sample rates. You mentioned
88.2,
which is twice 44.1. And then there's 96, which is twice 48, which is sometimes used to record. 48 is sometimes used to record.
Okay.
And Dr. Morbius was saying, well, you can't hear any frequencies above 20K anyway, so you don't need anything above 44. The Nyquist theorem says that if you sample at a certain rate, you can perfectly, theoretically,
right.
Represent all frequencies up to half that much.
Right.
So if you can hear only up to 20K, and none of us listening now even can hear that high, then all you need to do is record at 40 or 44 for a little headroom, and you should be perfectly fine.
Right.
Now, that's true theoretically. However, I will say that one thing that happens during the process of recording and playing back is that you have to have a very steep filter that prevents frequencies above 20 kilohertz from entering the recording system.
Right.
Because if you have frequencies come in that are more than half the sample rate, and those certainly do exist, you get what are called aliasing artifacts, and that can certainly be audible. So if you record at a higher rate than what you really need, according to the Nyquist theorem, then you can have a more gentle input filter or anti-aliasing filter. And that means that you're not going to get these aliasing artifacts into the audible range, frequency range. And so there is a reason to listen or to record at a higher rate than what you theoretically
need.
This
is hotly debated by many
people. It is. Yes.
But that's my position is there's no question in my mind, if you get 96.24, you're getting at least as much as you would need, right?
More than.
There's no reason to get 192.24. And a lot of people think 44.124 would be more than adequate. The higher sample rate, I mean, the higher bit depth.
Yeah,
because
depth correlates. Somebody in here said sampling rate and frequency response don't relate. No, they do. They're completely tied together.
That's the Nyquist theorem right there.
That's the Nyquist theorem.
Yeah.
But the bit depth relates to dynamic range.
Right.
So with 16 bits, you get 96 dB dynamic range, but practically speaking, it's more like 92, 93. And if you do four bits more, 24, or 8 bits more, 24 bits, you get 140-some dynamic range.
My thesis is get it at the rate that it was digitally recorded at.
That makes a lot of sense.
Why not have the master quality? If they recorded it, I talked to Joe Walsh. He says, I do 44.124 because otherwise it takes up too much space.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But he does go for 24-bit.
I think he did. I think that was his answer. So, and I think most recordings are probably 96.24
these days. Yeah. They are, I'm sure. Yeah.
Why not? So why not buy the master, in other words, if you
because,
can get the master?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And HD Tracks, they had a problem with some of their titles were upscaled.
Yeah.
16.44.1.
That's why. I mean, if you get it from Mark, obviously it's going to be best.
You know it's going to be the best.
Right. But he has such a limited catalog that.
He does. It's only stuff he himself has recorded.
Right.
For the most part. I think that he might have a few other titles, but generally speaking, and he vets them very carefully.
Right.
So know whatever, even if he didn't record it, it's going to be originated at 2496.
So if he has something you want, get it from him.
Absolutely.
Sure.
No question about it.
And then, I still buy stuff from HD Tracks. And, you just read the reviews and,
Mm-hmm.
I think right now they probably, they were busted. So I would imagine most of their stuff.
They're probably being a little more careful. Yeah. Exactly.
But there's no point in buying anything that wasn't digitally recorded in a higher res. That doesn't make any sense at all. Like Kind of Blue. I foolishly bought Kind of Blue in, whatever it was, 96.24. And then I realized, that was recorded on tape. Who was the guy you interviewed, though, that did that technique with the bias, right? He would find the wow and flutter in the tape by correcting via the bias tone.
I don't recall
It was really cool. It's a technique. I can't remember the name of it.
Oh, I'll have to look that up.
But, there's a tone on the tape, the inaudible bias tone.
Right.
And if there's wow and flutter on the tape, it will go, ooh.
It go,
so what they were doing is correcting the wow and flutter in the tape by modulating the bias tone.
Well, basically doing a little dynamic pitch shift.
Yes. And he believed that way he was able to get from the master tapes a better, more accurate rendition.
Well, that's pretty interesting. There's also the issue of, what was the frequency resolution and the dynamic range of the tape? And generally speaking, it's not that great.
Right.
So you're right.
Oh, it's highly constrained.
Yeah, so there's no real reason.
It's like scanning a Polaroid photo at 800 DPI.
Right.
There's not enough data there.
Right. You're wasting data is what you're doing.
Yeah. So
that
might be a case to buy vinyl because probably the vinyl of Kind of Blue, if it stayed analog to analog, and who knows.
Which it probably did in those days.
Yeah, that would be worth it.
Yeah. Now, vinyl, interestingly enough, can actually go out to, in the frequency range, can go out to like 40, 50 kilohertz, way beyond what we can hear.
That's interesting. I didn't know
that. But it's very interesting because it can do that. It's capable of doing that.
Huh.
Dynamic range, I don't think not so much.
Right.
Because that, of course, is the difference between the absolute softest and the absolute loudest. And that difference in terms of those wiggles that you were talking about in the Groove, you know, that can't be that much.
Right.
So that's it's all very interesting.
It is
Let's
fascinating,
see.
Yeah.
I love thinking about all this stuff, and I appreciate you asking to bring up the audio side of things because I don't talk about it as much.
Yeah.
It's where I came from, really. I came from pro audio.
Yeah.
And music and stuff. Speaking of live performance, I'm going tonight to hear the LA Phil do Pictures in an Exhibition.
So you're never going to hear that as good as you will at the Hollywood Bowl or wherever you're going to see it.
Disney Hall.
Disney Hall.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
that's the thing.
And the thing is, you go see a rock concert, you're still hearing it amplified, but an orchestra,
you're still hearing it coming through speakers.
You're hearing the natural sound. That's amazing.
Yep.
I'll never forget going with you to Lucas and
hearing that orchestra in the control room. Yeah.
Although I have to say, in the control room where they're listening to those Rebel speakers, it still sounded damn fine.
Oh yeah.
It was as close to being in the hall as you could be, but we'd end
but
up.
But then you walked into the.
And then you
room.
Hear it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got to run. I've
okay,
used up
I won't
all
see
your
you
time.
Next week.
All right. Take a good week off. Have fun in Santa Cruz.
Thanks.
See you, Scott. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, talking about all topics tech, including last hour, high fidelity audio of all things. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number if you want to talk about computers or the internet or smartphones or smartwatches. Tomorrow, we will be hearing about the new Galaxy S9. Yeah, it's time for the new Samsungs. The new Samsungs are here. Mobile World Congress begins this week in Barcelona, and still, it's funny because conferences are not really, for a lot of companies, the best way to announce products. Increasingly, Google and Apple and Microsoft announce products at their own events where they control, you know, the entire environment. There's no, you know, competition from any other company. But for some reason, with smartphones from companies other than Google and Apple, Mobile World Congress in Barcelona is still the kind of the place to announce it. So many companies are going to announce new phones, LG, I think, as well, this week. And tomorrow, it'll be 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern time. It's an evening announcement in Barcelona. They will announce the S9. There have been a lot of leaks. I expect it will have a dual camera. Everybody's follows in Apple's footsteps, right? Apple really leads the way. With one exception in this case, I believe the Samsung S9 will still have a headphone jack. I hope so. I see no reason to abandon the headphone jack. I disagree with this move. Both Google and Apple now have done it, and I expect that many companies in Barcelona this week will announce phones without headphone jacks. Darn them. Bluetooth is not a good alternative. It drops out. The sound quality is iffy. It's just annoying. I understand wires are annoying too, and it's nice if wireless headsets worked well. I guess they'd be a better alternative because the wires get tangled and they get in the way, you know. But they still work. They're very reliable. So we'll pay attention to that. Apparently. Apple's notch in their iPhone X, you know, that little gap at the top there, which really is not there because it looks good or it has some merit. It's there because they couldn't figure out a way to put the selfie camera and the sensors behind the screen. So they had to notch the screen out for those sensors. But other companies are treating this like, oh, Apple's invented something marvelous. So we're going to see more phones with notches, for crying out loud, including the new OnePlus. We'll have, I think, the OnePlus 6. Is that what they're going to call it? That's going to have a notch, a very iPhone-y notch. In fact, if you the pictures I've seen of it, I don't know if they're real or leaks, look an awful lot like they look an awful lot like the notch at the top of the iPhone here. It's crazy. Well, I'll have more information about the S9 next week after the event. Actually, I'll have more information if you listen to the Sunday version of the show. I do a show Saturday and Sunday. Not all stations take both, but We do have a podcast of the Sunday version, and if that's the show you hear, we'll talk about it. It's also expected that the other thing Apple did will be adopted universally is raise the price. Apple's iPhone is a precious iPhone 10 is precious close to $1,000. The version I bought was $1,150. It is to be expected that Samsung will probably hike the price up of the S9 and the S9 Plus. Maybe not that high, but into the 850 range, starting at $850. Details tomorrow after the Samsung event. Back to the phones we go. And Ted, Columbus, Ohio. Hi, Ted. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good, Leo. Oh, my goodness. I'm glad to finally be on here.
Hallelujah. What can I do for
Hallelujah.
You? Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
Right, so I got my dad has cancer, and he's going to the hospital all next month for a bone marrow transplant. And my question is, he wants a DVR. And if the hospital can't give him a DVR, they said maybe a cable card or something. He has a TiVo at home, and we want to figure out, is there any, like, solution or any other option to record shows shows? I don't know.
So your TiVo can be put online and available for him to watch in the hospital on a tablet.
Okay.
Furthermore, he can control that TiVo. So he can say, hey, record this show, and then watch it in the hospital.
And then if he had like an Apple TV, could he put it on a TV?
No, you would. So if he wants to watch it on a TV, TiVo does not play to Apple TV, unfortunately. Actually, he could. Okay. But this is complicated. He needs the TiVo software that's available for iOS and Android. You could get an iPad, put the TiVo software on the iPad, AirPlay it to an Apple TV that would then play it on the TV. So you'd have to buy both an iPad and an Apple TV.
Okay.
That's crazy. Many cable companies will also do the same thing. I think Comcast calls it Comcast Go, where you can control your DVR over the internet and then watch the shows off of that. Now, if he doesn't want to do that, or you can't get that working with your TiVo, then you can also subscribe to YouTube TV, for instance. And that has a built-in DVR. It doesn't get every channel, but it gets a great many channels, including, I'm happy to say, they just added Turner Classic Movies. I don't know if Dad likes old movies, but I do.
He likes that. Yeah, he likes the Food Network, too.
Yeah, they have the Food Network. So you can, and ESPN and the news channels and then your locals in many areas. That's $35 a month, but I think the first month's free. So you could set that up on an iPad or an Android device or even on an Apple TV. Apple TV has the YouTube TV on it, and he could just do all of that from his Apple TV if that's what you're going to get him for the – you want to have him watch it on the hospital TV?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you'll need something – or Chromecast. Pardon me?
He can watch his TiVo DVR things from home?
Yeah, but on a tablet. Wow. And then if he wants to – frankly, a tablet – is closer to him and is going to look better, and he's going to have better control. He can wear headphones. It might be a better solution at the hospital, especially because he could wear headphones. And you just put it on a tray. You get a stand for it, put it on a tray. He doesn't have to hold it or anything.
That's fantastic. Yeah. He's going to love that.
There are lots of ways to do this. The hospital TV has always been a big pain in the butt. You didn't control it. You know, the choices were limited. The quality was terrible. This is a much better solution. Frankly, an iPad would be something he'll probably value even when he gets home. Good luck with the surgery. I'm thrilled that he found a bone marrow donor that's going to work for him. That's really good news.
Yes, absolutely.
Is that a family member?
No, we all opted. We all tried to do it, but he actually found a closer match in Seattle.
Everybody listening, sign up for the bone marrow donor program.
Donor list. Yeah,
because it literally saves lives. It's one of the really amazing miracle treatments for cancer patients. And if you can get a good match, it's a cure. I know the hospital probably won't call it a cure, but it can be a cure. And it's so great that he found a match, because I know very many people who haven't. I signed up for it. Signing up for it's not a big deal, but you should be aware, and they'll explain this to you, that if you are a match, the process of extracting your bone marrow is not fun. On the other hand, you go through it knowing I'm going to save a life, and that's pretty amazing. Well, I'm so glad that he found a donor. Congratulations on that, and good luck with the process, and I hope your dad has a full recovery.
Well, thanks, Leo.
Yeah, thank you. You're a good son. Yeah, that's really great. Take care. Bone Marrow Registry, please, everybody, if you're listening, takes a minute to sign up for it. The initial process is very simple. After that, if you get a match, which I've been on it for decades, never been matched, but then you'll get a great feeling. We'll take a little break, come back with more of your calls. The number, again, 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Website where I put all the things we talk about is techguylabs.com. And I should put a little plug up for the beamatch.org is the bone marrow registry. And this is a really huge, huge thing you can do for somebody. And read all about it beforehand. Everybody should sign up. I have been on the registry for years. And it can save, it literally can save a life. And, you know, this is a little more than, say, being a blood donor. Initially, it's not. But it's something that can make such a difference. It's not as bad as donating a kidney. Let's put it that way. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Line 4, Mike, Kentucky. Hi, Mike.
How are you doing, Mr. Laporte?
I am well. How are you?
Surviving slow, but sure. I got no Windows 7 machines. Had the thing since Windows 7 came out. And I've bought the restore disk for it and the entire thing. Lately, I've had it restored a couple of times. And last time I did it, came up as it wanted the server number. I got it on the back of the computer, so I typed it in there. And then later on, it just said, this is not a genuine Windows machine.
Ah!
I'm going, what? I know it's genuine because I bought the thing. And I called Microsoft, and they said, well, you need to put Windows 10 on it. Well, I'm $90 or something like that. I said, no, thank you. And I've taken it to other people that said, well, the same thing. You need to put Windows 10. Or
well, it doesn't matter, because I got to tell you, if you put Windows 10 on, well, I guess if you buy Windows 10, you'll get a new activation. Because, you know, if you had upgraded to a non-authorized Windows 7, it still wouldn't be authorized.
Yeah.
You can actually... Well, why isn't it authenticating? And furthermore, Microsoft has not abandoned Windows 7. Why are they not solving the problem as opposed to trying to upsell you? That's the question.
I think that, you know, they're just, I guess it's just trying to upsell me. I have no idea.
Is there a sticker on the bottom of the machine?
There's a sticker on the bottom.
And it's got a serial number? Have you modified the machine significantly, put in a new motherboard? Or?
No, never. I'm scared to death putting it in. The only thing I've done on the thing is change batteries a couple of times.
That's fine. That's not good.
Battery died, so I got to get a new battery on it.
So the serial number on the bottom of the machine is attached to that machine in the
attached
sense that,
that machine.
If you change the machine significantly, it might not work. Yeah. But you haven't.
I thought the only thing I've done to it, like a change battery, I did have some friend of mine gave me something called Bellark Advisor, and I ran that, and it gave me the serial number of the thing. So I kept the printout of that.
Good.
Prove it's a serial number, and it has computer name.
Who'd you buy the computer from?
Oh, I got this thing from, I think I got it from Best Buy about the...
Okay, so is it an Insigne?
Long time.
Is it? Yeah, I know. If you got when Windows 7 came out, it's, believe it or not, 10 years old almost.
It's
a pretty old machine. But let me ask you this. Is it an Insignia brand or is it a...
No, it's an Acer.
Acer. There you go. That's what you need to know. So those disks you used have to be the Acer disks that came with that computer. You did use those, right?
Got the Acer disk. It came with a computer. I keep a copy of all the disks.
And that's what you used to reinstall it. And you've used those before, and it worked.
Right. I've done it before and it worked, and this time it didn't. I don't understand. I'm completely computer illiterate sometimes.
Make sure you very carefully enter it exactly as it is on the bottom of the machine.
Okay.
It should, and by the way, Microsoft, well, actually, in this case, it may not be Microsoft. You might need to call Acer. Microsoft does not support the other manufacturers, and it may be that Acer, although Microsoft runs the authentication server, normally what I tell people is call Microsoft, and if you're getting an error, they should ask you a couple of questions, and then say, oh yeah, let's activate that, and they can push the button that will make it activate. I am baffled.
I guess it's updated itself. I mean, I did update itself, even though it says it's not genuine. So I didn't know whether it's big deal or what.
Well, it is genuine, darn it.
I know.
And really offends me that Microsoft's solution is not to fix it, which, by the way, they're obligated to do. It's not that is not out of support. It's not end of service. That's still supported. Is to fix it, not to try to upsell you. That's like going to a car dealer saying, you know, something went wrong, I need a new tire on my car, and they say, oh yeah, we're not going to fix that, just buy a new car. That's nuts.
Well, sometimes I don't know. I'm 75 years old here, and I'm just trying to understand these things. Just
what number did you call? Did you call a number that it told you to
call? It's an 800 number. It's not one of these idiots that try to sell you things. I answer Microsoft Incorporated. So
I'm wondering if you called. Boy, let me see if I can find the number to call for authentication support, because that is not. That is not right. The person there should say, okay, let's figure this out. All I can think of, now, you haven't done anything with the machine, so you might want to just try starting from scratch again. Wipe the drive, do a fresh install, very carefully enter it. It's activated before. It should activate. You do not need to upgrade to Windows 10. Microsoft still supports Windows 7, not for much longer, but they do still support it. I think it's got to be an error either in the installation. Sometimes that can happen, you know, something, the certificate that goes with it got damaged. So that's why try doing it over again, wipe the drive, start from scratch, and very carefully enter it. And if it happens again, call Microsoft again and get somebody smart who will do the right thing and tell you, okay, yeah, you're right. If you tell, you know, you've got your product ID, you're on the same computer, you've got the disks that came with the computer, it should activate.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, at least you're armed now with the knowledge that it's not you, it's not your fault, it's something they're doing.
Okay. These things get me confused every now and then.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you. That's confusing. It's bad behavior on Microsoft's part. So you've got to enter it correctly, obviously. It could be just, you know, a slip of the keyboard, typing a B instead of an 8 or an 8 instead of a B. That's easy enough. I've done that. Could be that in the install process something went wrong. But they, you know, if there's an error, shouldn't be an error at all. You've done it before, so it shouldn't be an error at all. If there's an error, my experience with Microsoft's been in the past, they're pretty good about this. Now, one of the reasons they may have said this is there's no more. This all goes away with Windows 10. Once a machine is authenticated with Windows 10 once, it will never again have, in theory, it will never again have problems, and you won't have to enter the product key or anything like that. Maybe that's what he was thinking. Oh, it'd just be easier. But you don't want it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I think in an OEM machine, an Acer, you don't need to enter anything, right? So maybe that's evidence that it got screwed up in the install, right? He's been everywhere, man. He's Johnny Jett. He's breathing the mountain air. Well, he's not actually right now. His sinuses are all clogged up. Johnny Jett is our travel guru, joins us every week to talk about traveling better with technology, or as he says, traveling like a rock star. Hi, Johnny.
Hello, Leo.
Oh, man. You're home.
It's nice to be breathing. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
Not just mountain air.
10 days worth of cold.
Ugh. Yeah. So, anyway, it's something nasty going around. I'm over it. It's just, it's in my head now.
Yeah. No, not exact. Not in your head like you're nuts. It's in your,
right.
It's in your sinus cavity.
It's in my sinuses. Ooh. Yes.
Yeah.
I don't want to use Afrin because you get addicted to that stuff and then it just makes it worse.
No, just, you know, man it up.
That's what I'm trying to do. That's what I'm trying to do. So I got a couple of tips before we get started with the website and an app, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
So lately in the news, two airports, Orlando. So there's an airport in Orlando called Orlando Sanford International Airport, and they just filed a trademark to get the U.S. Patent Office to be able to put the word Orlando in it, even though it's 50 miles away from Disney. So people who fly Allegiant think they're getting a really good deal, and they put in Orlando. You're 50 miles away. You're not like MCO, which is, you know, that's the airport code for Orlando International Airport, which also people think it's Mickey's corporate office. The MCO stands for is much closer. So you gotta make sure when you're booking this, and it's not just there. Actually, last week, same thing happened in New York City. It's actually not New York City, Stewart International Airport. It's 70 miles north of Midtown Manhattan.
I've never heard of Stewart.
Well, now Norwegian flies there. So a lot of Europeans are getting confused because they, you know, Norwegian has really cheap airfares. Actually, one of my buddies told me today he just bought a fare from Florida to Europe for $300. So they think they find these really good deals, but all of a sudden they realize when they sometimes when they get there that you got a 70-mile ride to go.
So you want in the case of Orlando, MCO, not SFB.
Yep. Exactly.
In the case of New York, you want JFK, LGA, or Newark. Yeah, what's Newark?
EWR.
EWR, that's right. Any of those three, but nothing else.
Well, some people swear by Stewart, especially if you're going north of Manhattan, if you're not going to the city.
Yeah, you're going to Connecticut.
And I've also had some readers, because I wrote about it this week, and some readers were like, well, actually, I'd rather drive to Stewart because you don't have to have the gridlock of these other airports.
Right.
But if you don't know about it, and if you're not a local, I don't think you're going to be too happy when you arrive. Yeah, and that's happened to me once before, by the way. I found a cheap fare one time from like Ireland to France. I thought I was going to Paris. I was on Ryanair and I was at an airport. It was about an hour and a half north and you had to get a bus. And I was like, what?
Well, but we've said before, you sometimes get a much better deal if you say, I'm willing to go to any airport in the vicinity. But just check. Now, I'm looking at Google Flights, which is nice. And they actually, underneath the airport, they say how close it is to where you're going. So you can make the judgment yourself. You know, Newark's 8 miles, LaGuardia's 8 miles, JFK's 12 miles. But the one you're talking about, the Newburgh Airport, 55 miles.
No, this is Stewart. I'm talking about Stewart Airport.
Stewart International is in Newburgh. It's SWF.
Yes.
55 miles. And you know what? It's cheaper to go to JFK.
Yes.
So that's no benefit to you. There are a lot of airports, though, you can get to New York from.
Well, yeah, White Plains was another one we didn't talk about. Yeah. HPN. That's one I used to use because I grew up in Connecticut.
I like Google Flights, though. I have to say, I think we talked about this, right?
Yeah, we did. I don't like the new version. I like the old version. I haven't gotten used to the new one yet.
But at least they're telling you how far the airport is from the town. That's good.
Yeah, and what Google Flights does, which is nice, is they'll tell you, make sure you look at their little tips. They'll say, if you leave a day later or a day earlier, or go to a different airport, you can save, you know, X amount of money.
Right.
And I do that. Like, I go to Florida a lot to go visit my dad. And, you know, I'll put in Palm Beach International, but they'll say if you fly to Fort Lauderdale, it's usually cheaper.
Yeah.
Or Miami. But so anyway.
This is all crazy now. We're just in such a weird, you know, it's because of computers, frankly, that all of this, you know, your fares change by the minute and you don't know what you're getting. Yeah.
Correct. All right. So I got a website for you. So
yes,
one of my favorite things to do when I'm home and when I'm traveling is to go to farmers markets. And so the U.S. Department of Agriculture has a really good website. Actually, I'll have to tweet it out and put it in the show notes right now. It's ams.usda.gov. It's a long URL, but it tells you every farmers market in the country. You just put in the zip code and your location. and it will bring up and you really, what I like about Farmer's Market is not only that it's, you know, everything's fresh and hopefully organic, but you get a sense of place. And that's what I love to do it when
I do traveling. Too. Yeah. And there's farmer's markets everywhere now. I mean, it really is wonderful. You know, there's also apps that do this. Because this database you can pull from, I actually met somebody who's made a farmer's market app for all different countries all over the world.
Which one's that?
Oh, I don't remember the name of it. I'll find it for you. He was in studio, and it's basically just pulling from the database, the USDA database. It's very handy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And anyway, I love going to farmer's markets. It's just, again, especially in the foreign countries, it's there's nothing like it.
Yep. Yep.
So anyway, all right. Do we have time for
an app? Let's do an app too. Wow, are we going crazy here?
So, Allergy Eats. Fortunately, I don't have many allergies, especially dietary. But this website's called AllergyEats.com. It's an iOS and an Android app. And what they do is users can search for restaurants. In their areas or where they're going based on, you know, their allergy needs or specific restaurants. What I don't like about it is crowdsourced. So it's constantly evolving, but
that's not necessarily bad. I mean,
no, but you get some good information that way too, but you know, you need to have it verified.
Right. Right. Right.
So anyway, that's allergyeats.com.
And I'll find restaurants that don't have any tree nuts or gluten or any of the above. We see.
Well, Jack's allergic to peanuts.
Is he really?
Yeah. Well, not like a severe one, but we flew Southwest Airlines and we were worried about it. But they were great. You know, you tell the airline. We told them before.
I've been on Southwest to say we're not serving nuts today because somebody on board has a nut allergy.
Well, actually, they didn't tell us. They didn't tell passengers. They just served pretzels. They didn't they didn't make a big deal out of it, which was great.
Right.
So no one knew. They just served pretzels.
Yeah, because otherwise they give you the stink eye. Yeah, it's your fault I'm not getting nuts.
Right. Yeah. And we talked about it once before. But
why do they even still serve nuts? Why not just forget nuts in general?
I don't know.
Is there such a demand for peanuts in the world that if you don't serve peanuts? There was a little grumbling, I must admit, when the flight attendant came on and said, we're not serving nuts on this flight. But I like pretzels. I don't mind pretzels. What is this with nuts anyway? What is it, Johnny? What is it?
It's the allergies.
Johnny Jett is at johnnyjett.com. That's his website. Great travel newsletters you must subscribe to. They're free. He also has travel finder tools and great articles about the kinds of things we talk about on the show here. Many cases, you know, travel tips that can save you time and money. He also is on the Twitter at Johnny Jett. And if you get a chance, if you're following him on Twitter, look at his lists because you've made lists of airlines, flight attendants, all sorts of travel lists that are very handy.
Everything.
Yeah. So
everything.
If you like to travel, Twitter doesn't even mention this anymore, the list thing, but they still do it. They just don't talk about it. And it is one of the great ways to make Twitter actually useful as opposed to just, I don't know what.
For sure.
A sluice of nonsense. What's that you got there?
Have you seen this? Someone just sent it to me. The company just sent it to me. So it's kind of like an old Polaroid camera where it would do.
It goes on your phone photos. And prints that instantly.
It goes on your
Give
iPhone.
Us a review next week of the print with a Y. That's cool.
I'm going to check it out.
I got Lisa for Christmas. I got her a little pocket printer that does, 8x5x6 prints from her phone. And she loves that. That's really cool.
I think this would be great.
Thank you, Johnny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Well, I hope you feel better, my friend. That's terrible. Being sick is terrible.
I'm not sick. It's just in my head, my sinus right now. I just need to take something.
Rest. Sleep.
Much better.
Drink lots of liquids. Is Natalie and Jack sick or are they?
Natalie's still sick.
You might just be reinfecting each other. That happens.
Well, we're going to have to start sleeping in other bedrooms, separate bedrooms.
That does happen, you know. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Anyway.
That stinks. Well, feel better. Go to bed.
Thank you. Hope you have a great week.
You too.
Take care,
John. Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Whatever happened to Chumbawamba? 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. Peter is in Toronto. Hello, Peter. Leo Laporte.
Hey, Leo, longtime fan, even before you came up to your show.
Thank you.
Great to talk to you.
I miss Toronto. I don't have occasion to get up there anymore, and I really enjoyed going up there.
Yeah. No, it was good watching you up here, too.
Seeing concerts at Massey Hall, that's the thing, man. That's the thing. I love that.
Oh, you like Massey Hall?
I loved Massey Hall. Go down Yonge Street. Oh, just fun town.
Wow. No, well, maybe we'll come up again sometime.
I will.
Yeah.
I will. And Aaron Barbarian became a friend at Barbarian Steakhouse, and I haven't been there in ages. I don't know. I got to get I gotta get back up to the big smoke, they call it.
Yeah. I got a question about, actually, it's theme-related, but I bought a Sonos One speaker.
Yes.
Christmas time, and they were supposed to have the Alexa working. But
it works. You haven't had it work? I use mine every day.
It doesn't work with the Amazon CA.
It doesn't work in Canada.
In Canada, yeah.
Ah.
So I've been looking, and there's ways you can get an account. And, like, I heard it's an infrastructure thing. I don't know. But I've no
That's
idea.
Interesting. Because you can get Echoes up there, right?
No, yeah, and they sell the Sonos one, but
it doesn't work with Sonos
speaker because they have a Sonos system.
Yeah, so the Sonos one is a Sonos speaker. It's a single. It's like the Sonos Play one, but it has Amazon's Echo built into it.
Yeah,
it's, by the way, a limited version of Echo. It doesn't do everything Echo does, which is frustrating. And it's sad. I didn't realize that that even though you're allowed to buy now, this is relatively recent. Echoes in Canada. That doesn't work. So it sounds like it's a Sonos thing. What does Sonos say about it?
It's just a thing, something with Amazon or something they say. But I guess I was just going to ask you that there's ways you can sign in through an American account and things like that. I'm just wondering if it's better to wait or what would you say? Like, you could, there's ways of tricking it?
I mean, you're probably used to doing this in other regards.
Yeah.
For a while, I remember a lot of Canadians were getting direct TV by getting, you know, going down to Windsor.
That's how I watched.
Yeah, exactly. And getting a dish, and then you have to have an American credit card and all of that stuff. That's probably similar. And there are probably, I would guess, I don't know anything about it. If somebody's listening who's done it in Canada, let me know. Call us in or let us know. But my guess would have the same issues, which is, you know, sometimes they catch on. Remember that the Echo works best if it knows your location.
Right.
If it did that, you wouldn't be able to ask it for weather. I don't know. I think I can't. It's because you can get Sonos in Canada now. That's fairly. I mean, Echo in Canada, right? They just recently did that, right?
Yeah, but apparently it's something to do with the Amazon.ca site that they have to set something up.
It sounds to me that because they have finally brought Echo to Canada, it will just be a matter of time before the Sonos version of Echo works fine. Because remember, they're more and more companies using Amazon's voice services. That's what Echo is, the Amazon voice services, in cars, in, you know, Ford's going to do it, in all sorts of doohickeys and devices. It's everywhere. And I would imagine it's the same problem for those that it would be for Sonos. So I think it's a matter of time. I haven't heard any news on this. In fact, you're the first, you know, our friend Renee Ritchie, who's a regular on our podcasts, was so excited at the end of the year when all of a sudden he could buy an Amazon Echo.
Yeah.
But I hadn't heard that the Sonos was having the same problem. So
they have that Sonos One speaker. It's like the Play One, the older.
Yeah, I have one at home, and I love it.
Yeah.
I was listening to it this morning.
It's running like it's a Play One right now.
Yeah, it sounds like the connecting to the server in Canada is an issue. I have to think they're going to fix that.
Yeah, so I guess it's maybe better to wait just to see if they get it.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about, let me see, is there a silent partner? I had to transfer my Audible subscription to Canada to listen to them on my Echo. So I don't know if that's related, but that sounds like, I think this is normal. It's only the first couple of months of this, and they're just probably getting their ducks in order. I imagine this will all be settled quickly. seems, I mean, do you have an American credit card for other reasons?
No, no, I could probably get into.
Yeah, you could probably get
an
one.
An American.
Yeah. I don't know.
But I'm just worried later it's probably going to cause more problems if I try.
Yeah, there's always pitfalls to doing that. You know, because I think I have to think it'll be solved. Let me see if I can find out for you. And anybody listening who has a solution or has tried the workaround, you know, somebody may call and say, hey, you know, I'm in Montreal. I'm doing it. It works fine. I haven't had any problems. I don't know. Maybe we'll get some feedback. Nice to know you're listening, Peter. You're still listening in Toronto. I'll get up there sometime soon. Miss the big smoke. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and moving along to Don in Montana. Hello, Don.
Hello, Leo. Thanks Welcome. For taking the call.
Thanks for calling.
My wife's HP Pavilion, about 4 years old, and it's had a perennial problem of not waking up once it goes to sleep. And I've gone through just about everything I can find on the web as far as solutions, and nobody really seems satisfied with a solution. Some work for a few people. It seems to be predominant in HPs, and it seems to have occurred after Windows 10 came up.
Yeah, it's not unusual. It's not just HPs. First of all, make sure, and I would disable, there's two kinds of sleep. I'm sure you're not using Hibernate, but if you are, disable Hibernate, because that's the one that often the machines don't wake up from. But if it's not waking from sleep, you know, these, it's not unusual, unfortunately. And this is, did it come this way from the factory, or it was only with the Windows 10 upgrade that it started happening?
I think it was with the Windows 10 upgrade.
Yeah.
It seems to be spotty, and it's getting progressively worse to where it occurs all the time now. Originally, it
did. I don't know of a single fix for this, to be honest. You know what? You might try, instead of, so in the power settings, there's a number of choices. Instead of having the computer sleep, just have it turn off the screen.
Yeah.
And let the computer stay awake.
Well, that's the only one that anybody said worked.
And that saves your screen. It does reduce power consumption considerably. The screen is probably the biggest power eater. The processors themselves do slow down anyway, whether you sleep them or not. It won't go quite to the low power mode that sleep would give you, but at least it'll wake up, because that's very frustrating. Just go into the power settings, play with them, and try one, which is not to sleep. Never sleep, but have the screen turn off after 15 minutes. That's better than nothing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, this has been a problem since Windows was invented.
Oh.
It's very frustrating. My sense is it has to do with something called ACPI, which is how Windows it's the Advanced Power Configuration Interface. And it's a bug. It's not a bug. It's a common bug, I guess, because it's hard, especially on Skylake, which I bet you have, which is, did you get it in the last couple of years?
That's 4 years old.
4 years. No, you wouldn't be Skylake. You know, it's not just Windows. People are saying OS X has similar problems. And in fact, I think the newer Mac laptops do have similar problems. But it does seem to be a perennial problem with Windows. And the truth is, you don't save that many watts. The difference between turning off the screen and full sleep, maybe 10 watts. It's not a huge difference because the processor is going to slow down anyway.
Well, that's the one cure we have avoided so far, but I think we'll go.
It's fine. You're not going to use 60 watts. It's not going to be like leaving a light on.
Yeah.
Gosh, I wish there were a better answer for you. I'm looking at the chat room. Nobody there seems to have. Everybody's familiar with this. We've all had it to one degree or another.
Yeah.
Sleep is a challenging thing to do, it turns out.
Well, I've got a comparable computer, only it's a Dell, and I never have a problem with
that. I know.
But it's apparently something a little with the HP hardware or something.
Let me. Chumley has put a link in the chat room to a Microsoft forum post. I recently updated a Windows 10. Since the upgrade, I haven't been able to wake the computer from sleep mode without shutting it down and restarting it. Everything says I should be able to, blah, blah, blah. Here's the person here solved it by, the fault is the sleep option fails and crashes your computer when woken up. You might discover the virus checker has also been disabled.
Yeah, I just got done reading that one and trying it.
Oh, you've seen this one. All right. It says go in the power settings. It changed the power, what this power button does. Yeah. I mean, the only thing I know for sure is you don't want to use Hibernate. That's really big.
Yeah.
That's challenging.
Yeah.
You've looked at all the solutions. So as you can see, none of them are perfect.
Yes.
It's a bug, in my opinion, but it's a bug that a lot of computers suffer from. And, you know, it's something Microsoft did in Windows 10 that wasn't compatible with HP. They put off upgrading Windows HP computers to Windows 10 longer than any other brand. This may be why.
Okay.
This may be why.
I appreciate your advice again. Thanks.
Yeah. All right. Thanks. I wish I had better news for you. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye. Bye. Yeah. Sometimes you just live with these, right? This is life. Why, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536. We got a great website, absolutely free, no charge, no sign up. Just go to techguylabs.com. If you hear something on the show and you say, "What was that Leo said?" you can get links there, rehashes of the questions and the answers. We even put audio and video from the shows after the fact up there. Techguylabs.com. There's also a comment section for every question. So if you were listening and you say, "I know what happened for me when my computer wouldn't wake from sleep," and you want to add that in the comments, you can do that as well. No charge for any of that. TechGuyLabs.com. It's kind of funny to think about Windows 7. Maybe it's just me, but it feels like that's a relatively modern version of Windows. Came out in 2009. It's almost 9 years old. It'll be 9 years old this year. And, of course, then there was 8.0, 8.1. We're now up to Windows 10. It's several years old itself, isn't it? It feels like that's the new Windows. It's also, according to Microsoft, the last Windows. They're not going to do a Windows 11. At least, it's hard to say never, right? Never say never. But the idea is that they will, you'll just, when you get a computer, you'll get, when Apple does this in effect, you get a operating system with a computer, OS 10, or in the case of a PC, you get Windows 10. And then it just, every year Apple updates, Microsoft says maybe every 6 months they're going to update Windows 10. It'll have some new features. Of course, they'll continually update for bugs and security flaws. And you just kind of hum along. In a way, that matches how people used Windows. And it's why I think we had a caller last hour who couldn't get his Windows 7. He reinstalled it, couldn't get it to activate. And Microsoft said, "Well, you just get 10, which is not the right answer. It's a little miff to Microsoft, trying to upsell him. No, don't get, you can use Windows 7. It's perfectly good. But really, in the old days, that's what you did. I mean, he wants to stick with Windows 7 because he's used to the fact that when you use a PC, you don't upgrade the operating system. You just, you get the current operating system. Whenever you buy a new computer, you get whatever's new. So when he gets a new computer, sure, it'll have Windows 10 on it, but there's no reason to upgrade till then. That's how Microsoft did it for years. Sure, they sold, you could buy an upgrade version, and geeks like us would do that because we wanted the latest, greatest. But it is the case, generally speaking, that upgrading an operating system is risky, potentially hazardous. So, just use the operating system it came with until you get a new computer. Then you get the new operating system. Very few people, I think, actually went out and bought Windows to upgrade it. Now, Microsoft's upgrades are fairly hefty these days, the updates that they do. We've got one coming in the next few weeks, I would guess. They did two last year. They did the spring update and then the fall creators update. And we're going to do a spring creators update. the technical name for it is 1803, because which tells us it's going to come out in the third month of 2018, 1803, which means it will probably be offered to you as a free upgrade. You know, you get a little pop-up says, "Would you, you know, we got a big upgrade for you. You want it?" Maybe not in March, maybe in early April, but sometime soon. Not going to be a big change, but it is. Microsoft doesn't want us to call it a service pack, but it's kind of like remember the service packs? You'd get Windows 7 Service Pack 1, Windows XP Service Pack 3. It's kind of like those. And this will go on forever. once you have Windows 10 installed on a PC, if you upgraded it from Windows 7 or 8, or you buy a PC with Windows 10, that's it. You're done. You don't have to buy another version of Windows. It'll upgrade automatically forever. And apparently there won't be a new Windows 11, at least anytime in the near future. It's interesting, isn't it, that we don't get new operating systems anymore. Really, this is... There are four primarily operating systems. There's the biggest one, of course, is Windows. The operating system is the software that gives your computer its personality. PCs and Macs are very similar hardware-wise, but they're very different when you use them because PCs use Windows and Macs use OS X. They're the two biggest. Then there is Linux. You hear us talk about it, and there are lots of flavors of Linux, but they're all very similar. So I'll call that all one operating system, on the desktop anyway. And then there's a bunch of Unix-like operating systems called BSD, FreeBSD, NetBSD, OpenBSD, TrueOS. They're all essentially the same, too. So there's really four big ones. There's lots of little ones. There's specialized operating systems like QNX that runs in cars. There's iOS and Android for mobile devices. But we haven't seen a new operating system in a long time. Decades, really. Will there ever be a new one, I wonder? Maybe they're just going to keep taking the creaky old guys and patching them up, putting a fresh coat of paint on and saying it's new. I wonder if we'll ever again. Of course we will, right? But when and from whom? In a way, you could say the new operating system is the internet. You know, I guess I left out one operating system, the Google operating system, Chrome OS, which is it's funny because that's the one I'm always telling people to get. But really, Chrome OS isn't an operating system it is and it isn't an operating system in the Windows or Mac OS sense. It's not a generalized operating system. It's really just support for one program, Chrome, a browser. The operating system in some ways really is the internet, isn't it? The apps, the things you do, it all happen on the internet. That's really the biggest change that's happened over the last 20 years, that it doesn't really matter what operating system you're using. If you're using Chrome on Mac OS or Chrome on Windows, it's very much the same, or Chrome on Chrome OS or Chrome on Android, it's very much the same. The internet is now our operating system. We just use our computers as a window to the internet. What do you think? 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Questions, comments? Somebody's mentioning WebOS. Yeah, that was a fun OS. Palm Computer made that for its mobile device, the Palm Pre. Remember that? Do you remember that? That was 10 years ago. It kind of never went anywhere, and now it's built into TVs. Is it which TV uses WebOS? Is it the LG? I can't remember. If there's a new OS, it won't be what we think of as an OS. It won't be something that you install on the hard drive of a device, of a computer, and then boot into, and now you're in the OS. I don't think it'll look like that. I think you could make an argument that, in a way, Amazon's Echo is an OS. Google Assistant is an OS, is an operating system, isn't it? And more, that's kind of what it's going to be. You're going to talk to or interact with something that doesn't really seem to have a physical presence anywhere. It's just everywhere. It's around you. I imagine that's what's going to happen next. That your OS won't really be an OS. It'll be an entity that is with you wherever you go. Maybe you'll even form a bond, a relationship with it. It'll certainly start to understand you and know your preferences, be able to respond to you personally. Kind of like that movie Her, right? That's coming. I would bet you it'll come from companies like Google, maybe Apple, maybe Microsoft soon. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, will take some calls right after this. I really do feel like that's going to be the next operating system. That's highly speculative, isn't it? But I just feel like the next thing will be like Her. It'll be ambient. And it'll feel like it's yours. I think it'll learn from you. I mean, this is the promise of computing for years. It'll learn from you. It'll learn your preferences. It'll know what you mean. Right now, my Echo is just a pain in the ass. Excuse me, pain in the butt. This morning, okay, so it's partly my problem because I have effectively three Echoes in proximity to each other. I have one next to my bed. I have one in the bathroom. And I have one in my closet. We have a walk-in closet. And they all hear me when I say Echo. I'd say the trigger word. They all hear me. So I have four because I have an Echo, one in my closet, and I still have that Echo Spot, that alarm clock that Lisa won't let me put anywhere because it's got a camera in it. So that's also in my side of the closet. It can only see me. And I really just use it as an alarm clock. So really, there's four devices that will respond. There's only three trigger words. And I'm in the shower, and I'm trying to get some music. This is my mistake. I'm in the shower. I'm trying to get some music. So I'm shouting, I wanted to hear the Game of Thrones theme. So I'm shouting, Echo, play the Game of Thrones theme. And for some reason, the one nearest to me did not respond. The one in the bedroom responded. And but I couldn't hear it. So I said, Echo, play some rock and roll. So the Echo in the bathroom heard that one and starts playing some Chuck Berry music. But I've got Chuck Berry now mixed with the Game of Thrones theme. I get out of the shower and it's like they're crazy. And I said, Echo, stop. And no, neither one will stop. It's like they have a mind of their own. This is the future, isn't it? This is the future. Oh, Lord. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sweetest thing. 8888, Ask Leo. Line two, Kevin in Malibu. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Petaluma.
Hello, Malibu. How's the weather on the beach today?
Cool, but beautiful. Surf's up, you know. How can you complain? It's Malibu.
Can't complain, baby.
Hello, Grand Rapids.
PCH all the way.
There you go. Hey, Leo, I'm having trouble with our Amazon you-know-who today.
Uh-oh. I was just talking about my problem. Did you hear that?
I did.
I have too many in proximity, and they all answer, and they all do different things. It's driving me insane.
I have a solution for that, but it's your show.
So what's your problem? I'll give you my solution if you give me yours.
And this is out to everybody that's listening now. My two devices are intermittently going in and out today.
In and out. They're silencing. I know why. I know why.
I'd like to know.
This is something that just started with the Sonos integration because they're dipping. Is the music dipping out? Is that what's going on?
No, I'm listening to the hometown station here, KFI, which usually comes in great.
Yep.
And it'll play on both units.
You say, Echo, listen to KFI on TuneIn or on iHeart, rather, and it'll play it for you, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. It'll play for like 3-5 minutes and then go off.
And then it stops. It doesn't go down because the dipping is a known problem. It's dipping so that you can hear you.
It goes off.
It goes off. It stops. And it doesn't come back?
Then it comes back on for 3 minutes.
Oh.
And then goes off. And both units, one is a dot and one's the cylinder, does it at different times.
When they come back, does it come back where it left off?
No, it comes current.
Darn it. Thought I knew the answer. If it comes back where it left off, that's a pause in the internet, in effect. It's buffering. It ran out of packets. It's a problem with the internet. And that's not unusual. That's what buffering is. It'll pause. It'll catch. It'll get ahead a little bit. It wants to get ahead about 30 seconds. So it keeps capturing packets till it's ahead 30 seconds, and it picks up exactly where it left off. When you hear that, that's just a sign that your internet is not keeping up. The dropout could be internet dropout still, but it's not. But it's not rebuffering. It's literally going away and then coming back in the middle of something else.
Right. So you're so smart, Leo. So while I say these next couple things to all your people out there, if anybody's having a similar situation, whatever, use that chat thing and let Leo know. But here's what I've done. I called Amazon. They totally had no, they said, there's no problem. You know, turn your machine on and off. I turned them both on and off. They tried to blame it on my cable provider, Spectrum, which I called up, and they said, no problem.
They're all going to pass the buck.
Right, right. Then they started saying, well, here's port numbers to change. Mm. And I said, it's been working for, you know, 6 months. Why would it change this morning? And in India, they had no idea.
I think it is probably, well, it could be, okay, here's what it could be. It could be so many things. It could be iHeartRadio itself dropping out and coming back. And somebody in the chat room says, yeah, that happens to me on my phone with iHeartRadio. So it could be iHeartRadio coming and going. It could be Spectrum, your internet service provider, coming and going or not having enough bandwidth and the echoes saying, I'm not getting what I need. I'm just going to stop for a moment. But then it comes back. So it could be the source. It could be the transport, the internet. It's not likely that it is local, but the solution I mentioned, the dipping, the ducking is local. It's something new that they added to Echoes so that you could talk to them while they were playing very loud. So it might be related to that, but the problem is there's no way to know. There's just no way to know. It will probably, here's the thing, it'll probably go away. Have you noticed other issues with your internet service of late?
No, and I can see on my my modem router, you know, the lights that show the connection.
Yep.
All good.
Yeah, it might behoove you to get an Wi-Fi analyzer program. They're available on Android and Windows and Mac. And you can run them on any device that has Wi-Fi and look at what channels. This is what, you know, they were kind of getting to this point probably with Spectrum. They talked about different ports. That's your router. But right. What you want to look at is, because it's all Wi-Fi, it all is wireless. You want to look at if there's other wireless traffic going on. For instance, it's not unusual for devices to say, oh, I see a better signal over there. They're very fickle. I see a better, there's a hot signal. And they switch over and there's nothing on it and then they switch back. A Wi-Fi analyzer would at least tell you where there's congestion, if the neighbor's Wi-Fi is getting in the way, what channels are available. You can't really tell the Echoes what channel to use, but if your router is sophisticated enough, you might be able to modify that on your router. What router do you use?
It's a Yubi. Yubi, it's from Spectrum.
Oh, it's their router.
And again, it's been pretty good.
Yeah, I bet it'll get better. I bet it's just it's either iHeart timing out or it's your internet timing out.
Yeah, gotta be.
See if it does it with other music. You're not, by the way, the first person to say this. It's, I mean, really, I mean, let's think about this. We're getting magical radio waves through the internet. It's kind of amazing it works. I've heard of dropout before. Usually clears up over time.
That's good to look at. Here's the answer to the solution to your problem.
My too many devices all responding at once.
Set up a group. Give it a name.
I have a group.
We use the group name when you tell it to play it. They'll all go on or they'll all stop at the same time.
Yeah, that's what I have. I have a Sonos group. So I say, I want to hear the game of, I say, Echo, play Game of Thrones on the bathroom Sonos. And it starts coming out of my bedroom. And then I say, play rock and roll on my bathroom Sonos. It starts coming out of my bathroom. Now I've got Chuck Berry and Game of Thrones going at the same time. And I have groups. It's, you know what? The problem is, it's my fault. They're too close together. I need to separate them.
Well, let me throw.
Oh, hey, there's one other thing Mike B. saying in the chat room that's really a good point.
Yes.
It's not when a commercial's coming on, because sometimes they dump out commercials and just dead air.
I wish.
No. It's during me. They're dumping me out. Oh, well, okay. It was a nice thought. Keep listening. Maybe somebody will come up with a solution. The chat room is chewing on it. And they are mentioning, MD's mentioning in the chat room, my favorite Wi-Fi analyzer, which is not free, but it's available on Windows, called Insider, double S. But there's free ones called Wi-Fi Analyzer on the Mac. There's free ones on Android as well. You can't get one on iPhones or iPads because Apple doesn't give any application that kind of access to the radio. So no app can do it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You may be just changing the channel. Maybe your neighbor's, you know, impinging. Line 4, Brian, Chino Hills, California. Welcome. Hello, Brian. I think it's, oh, no, I'm sorry, Nam. Brian, you're coming up. I looked at the wrong one. Nam from Lake Forest, California. I believe it's you, Nam.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Oh, thank goodness. I'm well. How are you?
Good, thanks. Well, I called you a couple of months ago. Thanks for the advice about the fingerprint on the iPhone.
Yes.
And I didn't have to go to the store. A couple of weeks after that, it automatically it kicks in. My daughter was happy. It came
yay,
back.
Yay.
Yeah. reason I called today was for Chromebooks. I was debating to get a Chromebook or a regular laptop. I would say 80% of my use is on tablet. I have a tablet Samsung and an iPhone.
All right. Well, pretty much you can do anything on a Chromebook that you can do on that Samsung. There's a way to think of a Chromebook. By the way, I love Chromebooks, and I highly recommend them. The question is it for you? It isn't for everybody. Yeah. If you do things that require Windows or Mac OS, for instance, you know, most commonly video editing, photo editing, recording audio, you know, making music, the kinds of high-end, what we often call professional uses, you might need a general-purpose computer. But if you're happy with a tablet, you'll prefer, you know, I think you'll prefer a Chromebook because you get a full screen, you get a full keyboard, rather. You get a bigger screen, touch screen. Chrome OS is essentially the Chrome browser plus any extensions you can install in the Chrome browser. And if you get a modern Chromebook, Android device, Android apps, because you get the Play Store on there too. And that's why I say most of what you can do on your, if you're doing it on the Samsung and you're happy, your Chromebook will be able to do that at least.
Another thing is, say if I want to put transfer picture back and forth from camera, plug in USB and put it on an external.
Yeah, it's less good for that because Chromebooks don't typically have a lot of storage. The theory behind a Chromebook is that you will be storing stuff on the Google Cloud.
Right.
So typically Chromebooks don't have a lot. Yeah, I wouldn't think of your hard drive on a Chromebook as local storage. It's not really designed for that. On the other hand, many cameras have apps, Android or iOS apps. This is what I do. So if I'm taking serious pictures with my serious professional camera, the first thing I will often do is just connect it to the phone and copy the images off. Now, those are JPEGs. They're not super high quality, but they're good enough for posting on Facebook and Instagram, sending to family and friends. If you do that and you use Google Photos, it'll automatically be backed up to the cloud. Google Photos will have a copy. That copy will be available to you on your Chromebook, no problem, without doing anything extra. You just go to Google Photos. And Google Photos has a lot of editing capability. Plus, there are third-party editors like Polar, which I highly recommend, P-O-L-A-R-R, that you can add as a Chrome extension that's a very capable photo editor. But you're not getting the raw image. So if you're like a serious photographer, then you're probably going to want to use Lightroom or Macintosh and Adobe products like Lightroom or Photoshop. And this isn't quite that.
Well, can you put like external hard drive, connect to it in an external?
You can, but what are you going to do with the Chromebook to those photos? You just want to look at them?
Well, transfer back and forth to DVD driver?
Yeah, typically, no, you can't burn DVDs. Typically people why would you transfer it off the camera? Because you want to edit it in Lightroom or Photoshop. You want to burn it to a DVD.
Those kinds. on a trip. I wanted to send
make a slideshow. Yeah.
Right.
No, these are designed for internet. They're not physical media is dead. Did you not get the memo? The whole idea of putting it on physical media is kind of old hat. And Chromebooks move you aggressively in that direction. Yeah. So if you do want to burn a DVD, you shouldn't get a Chromebook. On the other hand, you might start to rethink your workflow. For instance, take those pictures. You copy them over to your Samsung device or your phone using the app. Right. You know, Canon, Nikon, everybody has apps. Panasonic. Right. You can then have them automatically upload to Google Photos, or if you're on an iPhone, okay. Apple's Photos. You can make a share folder on Google Photos, send somebody the link. Instead of sending them a CD, DVD, or a big folder full of photos, you send them the link to Google Photos. They click that link. Okay. This is how I share photos now. In fact, Google Photos now will recommend at the end of the day, oh, I see you took 23 pictures of your wife. Would you like to share them with her? And you say, yes, you press a button, and boom, they're automatically shared with her. That kind of thing is really what the cloud is very good at, and it saves you all of this DVD burning mess up stuff. So if you think you could live with that workflow, you're going to have to modify your workflow. But if you think you could live with it, it is the more modern, easier, in the long run, I think, easier way to do it than mailing somebody a DVD.
Is it secure?
I think it's more secure. Where's that DVD going?
That's a strange.
Right? No, but I mean, are you mailing it? How are you getting it to them? You're sending it through the U.S. mail. I don't think that's more secure than the internet. So, it's secure. To my knowledge, Google has never been compromised in any way. In fact, it's usually Google that's telling the other companies you've got a problem. Google's the one discovering all the problems because they have a very aggressive and very smart security team. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe Google has ever been compromised, ever. So it's Apple has. So it's a pretty secure place to store your photos. It's sure a lot more convenient. You don't have to do a lot of work on it. The only negative, and the reason pros don't do this, is quality. It's not bad. It's fine. If you're shooting JPEG with your point and shoot, you're not going to see any difference. I frankly think it looks pretty good even with my professional, you know, my Sony AR-7 cameras or my A7R camera or my Nikon or my Canon 5D Mark III. But if I really want a good quality photo in high resolution, I'll take the raw image off the Canon 5D, put it on a PC or a Mac, edit it with Lightroom, and then, you know, either print it or put it up on a website in all its glory. That's the kind of thing. It's a slight difference. It's probably something only a professional, very serious photographer would care about. For most people, frankly, and even for me nowadays, Google Photos is fine. And anything you could do with Google Photos, you could do on a Chromebook. Here's why you want a Chromebook. You might say, I'm giving up something on a Chromebook. Why would I want to give up something? Well, price is one. Chromebooks are much less expensive. But more importantly, they're much more secure. A general purpose operating system like Windows or Macintosh it's designed to let you do anything. That's what it means. That's what you could launch rocket ships. You could, you know, it's general purpose. But that means bad guys can do anything too. And if a bad guy gets into your system, they have a lot more capabilities. Chromebooks are very much more locked down. The ways to compromise a Chromebook are very, very limited. They're not going to cause problems. They're much more secure. And if anything does happen to a Chromebook, it has a feature called Power Wash that in a matter of minutes gets you right back to where you were before with no loss of data. So that's why I like Chromebooks. I think that it's worth, for most people, you don't need all the power of a general purpose computer. It's worth giving up a few things or more likely rethinking how you do things to get all that security and convenience and reliability. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You remember, Lena, when all those celebrity photos Those nude photos got released. Remember that? That was Apple's cloud that got compromised. That has, to my knowledge, that has never happened to Google. Yeah, they're very aggressive about security, and they have the best security guys in the business. There are no vulnerabilities in the hardware. That's one of the things Google did is it's got secure boot. If there's any change to the firmware, the operating system, it won't start up. It says, nope, it's been modified. I'm going to power wash it. So even that, I mean, you'd have to, if you could open it up, I guess you might be able to compromise it, but I don't think so. You have to put it in developer mode even just to put Linux on it. The only exploits I'm aware of are exploits that Chrome is vulnerable to. So malicious extensions, that kind of thing. The Chromebook is vulnerable to those because Chrome is vulnerable to those. Oh, that's interesting. You know, that I've used Chrome to do programming, a code anywhere and other places, or you can use SSH. I can log in on my Chromebook to my server at home. Woo! Woohoo! Ain't no stopping us now, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're on the move with our disco guy. We should call you the disco whiz, Dick D. Bartolo.
Oh, that's good. That's
Mad
good.
Mad Magazine's maddest writer, Michael Cozio, my musical director, has apparently decided that you must have disco music every time you come on the show.
Oh, I love it. What are you kidding?
Yeah. Perfect. This guy used to live at Studio 54 back in the 70s.
I did. And then I moved it onto my houseboat.
And then he moved the disco to his houseboat.
Exactly.
So Dickie D joins us each week. He's not only world famous as Mad Magazine's maddest writer, in every issue of Mad Magazine for many decades.
Yes.
And that's still ongoing. Don't be dissuaded. Don't be disturbed by the notion that Mad has moved to Los Angeles. Dick still contributes, right? Every issue.
That is
right?
Correct. Every yeah. issue. Yep. They can't get rid of me. They tried moving. They wouldn't give me the new
they didn't
address.
Tell you where they moved to.
No, but I'm still sending in and is still buying it.
But he also happens, he spends all that mad money on gizmos and gadgets. We call him the Gizmo Wizard. And he joins yes. us each week. You were just on World News Now this week, right?
I was talking about Toy Fair.
Oh, I love
it. Toy Fair
so 20. Jealous.
Toy Fair is great. And Toy Fair now has gotten like CES, where they have a huge startup section on the lower floor where you can go down and find mom and pop operations. And so I'm walking by. And there's this company called Backyard Brains. And
Backyard Brains.
Backyard Brains. I said to the guy, what do you got here? I said, I'm intrigued by the name already. He said, well, we have kits here that let you do various things with your brain. I said, okay. He said, you can use your brain and open and close this claw, or I can use my brain and control your arm.
What?
I said, yes, exactly. I said, what? He said, are you up for this? I said, yeah, okay. So he took three self-adhesive electrodes, put them on my arm, put three on his arm, connected us with alligator clips with a piece of wire between us, okay? And then he said, now I'm going to connect us to a TENS unit. He said, you know what they are? And I said, something to do with like relaxing muscles. He said, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He said, now I'll close my fist and you involuntarily will close your fist.
No.
I said, okay. So he did it and my fist closed. And, you know, so now we're getting a crowd around. So he said, you know what? So they know that we're not faking this. You turn away from me. But leave your fist where
that
everybody can
see. That is terrifying. He's controlling you remotely.
Yes. And I said to him, do anything you want. Don't make me write a check because I only have $30 in my account. It was pretty neat. So this company has all of these very high-end kits. The one that – their most expensive one that I played with was this kit called Human to Human interface. Okay. So it's a kit with all of these devices. It is $260.
Okay. But where can I get where can I get one? I want to control my wife.
Backyard brain.
She has to cooperate, though, right?
Yeah. No. No. She has to cooperate.
Only
to
in let setup. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. Well, you know, I don't know if they have anything that can control her mouth.
But, yeah, was so it on their weird website, having your hand involved?
Yes, it's very weird. Have you ever used a TENS unit? Because I didn't. You definitely feel
people use
something
for pain relief, right? They put it on their back.
Exactly.
Is it tingle?
It's tingle. It tingles. Okay. And he said, I'm going to boost this up a little. And then there was a lot of tingling. I mean, I wasn't afraid, but I knew. I knew there's a lot of stuff in my arm. I did not realize that I was going to involuntarily close my fist when he closed his fist. So,
you know what weirds me out about this?
Yes.
Is this a toy fair? It's a, they consider it a toy.
Well, I think that's why it was not upstairs. Maybe,
oh, it's a downstairs toy.
It's a down. Yes, it's. I was in the scientific division.
Oh, okay.
Was in the hospital.
So, right. Backyard Brains does a lot of different stuff. That's kind of cool.
Exactly.
Oh, I'm going to get this for Michael. Our 15-year-old.
Oh, he would
love
this. Yes, and then you can also hook it up to your iPad, and then you can see your brain waves as they're doing things on the iPad.
Wait a minute. They put this on a cockroach?
You know what? I don't know why they used that for their logo. But yeah, I tried not to look at that. Yes, exactly.
That seems cruel to the cockroach.
It does. Yes.
You're making a cockroach dance involuntarily?
Yeah, I didn't even see that part. I just know that their logo is a roach.
Yeah. Anyway, this is interesting.
Unfortunately, they had no roaches at the table. I wouldn't have stopped.
Wow, this is really interesting. Backyardbrains.com. You know, the best thing to do, though, and it's a very funny video, go to Dick's website, gizwiz.biz, because he's got a little clip there of this happening, of a woman controlling another woman's hand with her hand.
Yeah.
Wow. And are they going to make this a toy? No, it's really an educational.
It's an educational. I said, do you sell it? He said, we sell it to parents who want to teach their kids neuroscience. He said, we basically sell a ton of these to schools.
I'm buying it right. Well, is it? Oh, you said $260. A little pricey.
Yeah.
But boy, yeah. I think this would be. See, if you. So we have a ninth grader, right? And we're trying to get him interested in science. This would be. He would dig
that. You know
what?
They'll buy it and let him come on. Screensavers or something, or show it on Screensavers.
And make me jump. That's creepy as heck.
Yeah, this would be good when you have a guest who isn't animated. You could say, so are you happy to be here?
Wait a minute, could it work over the internet if, like, you were there?
You know, I don't.
Let's make it work over the internet. Of course it could work over the internet.
I bet we can. Okay, we can. Yeah.
So I want to control you remotely.
Okay. I can't stop.
Here's, I'll control everybody listening. Go to gizwiz.biz. That's Dick's website, gizwiz.biz. Click the GizWiz, visits the tech guy for information about Backyard Brains. While you're there, play the What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. All you have to do is come up with a clever name for whatever this gizmo or gadget is. It's a close-up picture. He gives away 18 autographed copies of Mad Magazine to the winner. And it is the landmark final issue of Mad Magazine, which is sure to be a collector's.
Yes, a final New York produced Mad.
Yeah. Basically, it's an artificially generated collector's edition. All the details at the website, gizwiz.biz. And don't forget Dick's fabulous podcast he does with Chad Johnson. It's called the GizWiz Podcast at gizwiz.biz. TV. Thank you, Dickie D.
Oh, you're welcome. Okay, Leo, take care and stop doing what you're doing. Will you stop doing that? Okay, bye.
Well, that's terrifying. But what a great way to get a kid excited about a science and neuroscience, especially. I mean, isn't that cool? Wow. Out of time. Thank you, Michael Cozio, for the great music. Thanks, Kim Schaffer, for answering the phones. Most of all, thanks to you for joining me. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.